Simply Financial with Christopher Calandra, Certified Financial Planner, is an innovative, comprehensive, informative, and cutting-edge podcast that discusses financial topics ranging from personal finance, economics, politics, and personal growth. Simply Financial will cover intriguing and thought-provoking questions so that the listener can simply increase their financial IQ.
Welcome to the Simply Financial Podcast. This is your host, Christopher Calandra. This is episode number 26 of season 2. Today's format is a little different than most of the episodes. I recently did an economic update webinar for clients, prospects, and centers of influence. It provides just a summary of how we work with clients combined with an economic update, kind of detailing what's happened in the economy, and there's a lot going on since January 1st. So with that, I hope you enjoy the webinar. Thank you.
Welcome to today's economic update, the 2018 mid-year economic update. I appreciate you taking some time out of your busy day to hear about where we are. Today's agenda is an economic review, some strategies to consider, and we'll do Q&A. I want to be respectful of everyone's time, so I'm not sure how many questions we'll be able to get to, but if you do want to pose a question on the toolbar, there's a chat button. It kind of looks like a cloud or, I don't know how you would describe the little bubble circle, but pose your questions there. I'll get to them either during the presentation if it makes sense, or perhaps towards the end as we begin to wrap up. I wanted to give a brief economic review of the first part of this year. We'll consider some strategies moving forward. And it's important as we begin to know that we here at Elliott Wealth Management Services, especially me, focus on the five key areas of financial planning. They are protection, retirement, investments, tax planning, and estate planning. As a holistic wealth manager, our goal is to provide comprehensive financial planning and incorporate these five areas when helping our clients with their overall financial picture. Let's talk about the S&P 500 so far this year. The year 2018 started off as a very interesting one for investors. In January, as this chart shows, the S&P 500 continued its upward charge. This charge began amazingly right after the presidential election in November of 2016 and provided 2017 with a very strong year. But by the end of January into very early February, investors saw the return of volatility and heavy downward movement. If you think back to the early days of February of this year, we had several notable days where the market went down significantly. This seesaw action continued through March. April was a little more tame, and the major market indexes squeaked out a small gain. But as this chart clearly shows, the low volatility and the straight upward path that we experienced in 2017 is not in place any longer now that we are in 2018. This chart, which is a one-year chart of the S&P 500, you can see that going back over the previous 12 months, the overall market is still up. But once again, 18 is not the same pattern as we saw in 17. If we go back a little longer, and if we're investing, we want to have a long-term perspective, not a short one. The 10-year chart shows that long-term investors are more likely to have a better return, even though this 10-year chart that you see includes a downturn from late 2018 through early 2009 when we were in the midst of the Great Recession. And it also includes this little blip on the screen that we've experienced with some tough going in early 2018. For most investors, stock or equity holdings should be thought of as a longer-term investment. I think most of you listening, if you've spent any time with me, can appreciate this. I think over the years, Americans have gotten programmed to appreciate that stocks are best for the long term. So understand, too, that with this graph, past performance does not necessarily indicate future performance. I don't have a crystal ball. I wish I did. But this 10-year chart, I think, is very, very telling. I mentioned volatility a moment ago. Volatility, as measured by the VIX, it's an index. It clearly shows, this is a VIX index, clearly shows that volatility is back. And the outlook is for more stock market volatility for the remainder of this year. That means that investors need to be watchful, not necessarily fearful, but certainly watchful. In fact, market movements up or down or volatility is, of course, a part of investing. So let's give you some statistics to kind of frame this discussion about volatility. S&P 500 moved up or down 1% or more 23 times during the first quarter of 2018. Incredibly, that is three times the number of days in all of 2017. So I think this clearly illustrates that we are in a much different cycle in the market in terms of volatility this year than last year. If we go back and look with a little bit more of a historical perspective, there's been 9 years since 1958 in which the first quarter of a calendar year had between 20 to 25 days of up or down moves. And what this analysis shows is that the remaining three quarters in those years all had above average up-down moves, with an average total of 86 up-down movements of 1% or more in that year. That is why lots of analysts and what we think here at Elliott Wealth Management is why we think that we'll see more volatility moving forward, that what we experienced in the first quarter will probably continue a little bit. Now, sometimes when people think volatility, they think that it's automatically a bad or results in negative outcomes. This third bullet point on the slide shows that the average total return for those 9 years that we studied from 1958, that those 9 years had an average total return in those years of 9.6%. So this is not necessarily a precursor to bad investment results. Volatility does not correspond exactly to positive and or negative returns. In fact, 9.6% is not so bad. The stock market over the long term has an average total return of somewhere between 10 or 11%. So this 9.6% number is only a stone's throw away from the regular average, even in years where you don't have as much volatility as these 9 years we analyzed. As a side note, historically, some of the most volatile months in a calendar year include June and August. We've seen that this month has been volatile, just like the last couple of months have been. Even this week, as of the recording of this webinar, we see that the market has been fairly volatile. So remember, an index, whether it's the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones, isn't a good measure of your portfolio in most instances. And recall, fluctuations are a part of investing. And I'll also add that there is a pretty good debate in financial circles about whether or not the bull market is an up market, an uptrending market, is still in its prime or on its way out, because we've been in a bull market since the end of the great financial crisis, with the market getting to bottoms in early March 2009, and since then the market has rallied tremendously. And by historical standards, this is a fairly long tenured bull market. And so the debate is whether it is on its way out or is it still going strong. I mentioned this earlier. Equity markets, the stock market, since the election has seen steep gains. I also alluded to the fact that we had record low volatility in 2017, and that's been followed by high volatility thus far in 2018. We think that'll continue. And this, in political circles, can be debated, but my opinion is that the new tax law, which was signed by President Trump in December of 2017, will provide a boost to Q1 earnings, and generally speaking, will provide a boost to corporate earnings throughout 2018 and help drive economic growth in this country. I realize, especially in this highly charged political environment we live in, that might be controversial, and some of you that might be listening, especially those that are not fans of President Trump, may struggle with this a little bit. But my opinion regardless of the politics is that the reduction in corporate taxes and the reduction in personal income tax rates and the expansion of personal tax brackets, as well as changes with deductions and an increase in the standard deduction, I think all of those are favorable for economic growth. So there are some favorable signs for equities, and they include increasing but relatively tame inflation, interest rates, which we're going to touch on some more in a couple of slides, are on the rise, but they're still near historic lows. I just mentioned the tax cut, I believe, is and will continue to have a positive effect on the economy, and that should translate to the stock markets. We have record corporate profits. U.S. corporations, as well as corporations around the world, are seemingly in good shape, good balance sheets, profitable, driving revenue. They seem to be very healthy. We have high consumer confidence. This is something that is, I don't think, widely reported, and I think it's remarkable, but we have consumer confidence levels the like we have not seen since probably President Bill Clinton was in office. Just last night, this is not part of the presentation, I'm ad hocing a little bit, but I read an article in the Las Vegas Review Journal, and it cited a statistic that the Small Business Optimism Index, so it's an index that is not looking at all businesses, but rather just small business ones, reached its second highest level ever in May. And this consumer confidence, this small business confidence, is doing wonders for the economy, and that should translate into helpfulness for the stock market. The consumer confidence has not gotten much play, but I think if you follow the media, you're aware that we are at a point where the job market is much healthier than it was a year ago and healthier than it was 2 years ago and 3 years ago. We have extremely low unemployment now. The unemployment rate stands at 3.8%. That's the lowest it's been in some 18 years. It is a trend that began with President Obama becoming president and the end of the financial crisis, and the United States has created jobs month after month after month to the point that I believe we've created jobs for 94 or 95 months in a row, which is a record, and that too is a great thing for this country's economy. Now, I'm not a Pollyanna. There's still issues in the job market. There are far too many people that are not doing the type of work they would like, or they're underemployed. They might be working part-time when they'd rather work full-time, or they might be working in food services when they would rather be in another field. There's still lots of work to be done, but we have done a great job, this country, going back now since the early days of President Obama's administration. This trend started with him. It's continued with Donald Trump's presidency. The country's done a great job in improving and creating a very healthy job market. It's something, regardless of your politics, I think should be celebrated in a very big way. In general, as I've alluded to, we have overall improved economic activity, and that is cause for tremendous optimism. For those of you that are clients of mine and we've reviewed accounts, I think this aligns with you, what I've probably spoken to you about on an individual level, this optimism that the markets and our financial plans have a good chance of being successful this year and beyond, in part because of the great fundamentals in the U.S. economy today. Now, there are areas of concern. Domestic politics is top of the list. I use the term the soap opera or the circus. There's a lot going on, and that is the type of thing, like all of these items on this slide, are things that could potentially derail this optimism, could create an environment where the U.S. economy doesn't grow and doesn't perform at the levels that are expected. So this is stuff that we want to monitor, and we do closely on behalf of our clients. So we have domestic politics. We also have international relations. We have the discussions with North Korea. We have ongoing issues with the Iran and the Iran deal. The Middle East is a mess like always. We have this trade conflict going on. I wouldn't go so far as to use the term war, but President Trump is certainly working to change the paradigm, and we've begun to threaten and or issue tariffs against some of our trading partners. Some of those trading partners are our historic allies. Others are not so much, like China. I think that despite the fear about a trade war, I think it will largely amount to not much. My opinion is that in this hyper-sensitive 24/7 cable news world we live in, that some of this is getting a little blown out of proportion, and that trade wars are often talked about, often worried about, but very rarely materialize, and I do not think they will materialize in this instance, but it's an area of concern. There's concern about inflation, concern about interest rates. We're going to do interest rates in a couple of slides, so I'll provide a little more color in a bit. Understand that President Trump's administration, one of their major initiatives is to deregulate. And they have done a very, they've done a lot of deregulating. And we could debate, again, on the political realm, whether that is good policy or bad policy, whether deregulating smartly or not. But the reality is that they are on a strong drive to deregulate the economy, and it's something that we want to monitor. And then lastly on this slide is S&P valuation. The stock market has done well. As I mentioned, we've had the stock market do well for an extended period of time coming out of the great financial crisis. And one of the things, one of the many things that we monitor is whether the stock market, especially based on a historical perspective, is becoming overpriced. I don't think that's the case today, but again, it is one of the concerns. Let's talk about the Federal Reserve a little bit before we get into interest rates. We have a new Federal Reserve Chairman, Chairman Powell. He was appointed to chairman the chairmanship by President Trump. He replaced Janet Yellen. And his first meeting, he raised interest rates a quarter of a percentage point to the range of 1.5 to 1.75%. Last week, Jerome Powell and the rest of the Fed Board of Governors decided to raise interest rates again. So last year, 2017, the Federal Reserve raised interest rates three times. So far this year, they've raised interest rates two times. They seem to be doing this interest rate increase cycle deliberately. The risk is they're going to go too fast, too much interest rate hikes, where the markets and the economy cannot digest it, and it could derail a lot of the economic growth and optimism that I spoke about a few slides before. So expectations are for another rate increase, perhaps two, by the end of the year. But what the Federal Reserve is doing is really, really important, and it deserves careful monitoring. Just to show you how the Fed is being deliberate, they decided to hold rates steady in May, and they expressed confidence that inflation is not going to be a problem, and they, in May, highlighted that they were likely to raise interest rates in June, which is exactly what happened. Again, most economists forecast that we'll get one or two more interest rate rises this year. I am in agreement with that. I think it would be really surprising if they didn't do one more. I think one more would be enough for this year and have them do 3 in 17 and 3 in 18, but I think it's a pretty good bet that we'll actually get four this year. Let's talk about the U.S. Treasury yield for a moment. You could see in the bottom right of the slide in red that the 10-year U.S. Treasury yield on May 1st moved above 3% for the first time since 2014. Now, why do I point this out? I point this out because it's a psychological level for the markets, because we haven't seen 3% 10-year yields regularly since 2013. And what happens is, as the 10-year yield goes up, most economists and market watchers will begin to consider 10-year, the 10-year rate as competition for stocks. If you were to study your for your securities license, you would learn that treasuries are considered riskless. It is generally accepted if you invest in U.S. treasuries, you hold them for 10 years, that there's no risk, that the U.S. government will pay its IOU. Now, we could debate whether that's legitimate or not, but that's not for our purposes today. But what I'm driving at is that as U.S. treasury rates go up, it starts to look like competition for stocks. Now, yield, this 3% yield I'm speaking about, is a simple concept. It's the current income return you receive for when, for instance, you own a bond, and if you bought it for $1,000 and it pays $30 per year, that's a 3% annual yield. The U.S. Treasury stature as a benchmark comes from being perceived as risk-free, just like I said, and 3% is considered a key threshold. There's three reasons why. The first is mortgage rates. We've seen mortgage rates tick up. The second is the stock market and corporate debt. If corporate borrowing becomes more expensive, as interest rates go up, it becomes more expensive for borrowers, that could potentially lead to corporate projects or expansion plans being put on hold or canceled. Remember, while interest rates are up from a year ago, they are still at historically low levels. Over the last 60 years, the 10-year U.S. Treasury, which just started to bounce around near 3%, the 60-year average is at 6%. So we're still only half of the 60-year average. Investors always need to be watchful of interest rates. I think that's especially true today with this episode we're in, where the Federal Reserve has begun to raise interest rates. I believe they will continue to raise interest rates, and that is going to have a key impact on what goes on in the markets for the foreseeable future. even though interest rates have gone up, if you look at this slide, is a year ago, the Fed funds rate was at 0.91. It's now at 1.75. And even though that is a big, big percentage move, 1.75 is still pretty darn low. And when we look at the translation from the Fed funds rate into what we're experiencing as consumers with our banking relationships, you see that a year ago, your average bank money market rate was 0.12%. It's now at 0.18%. Now, that's a 33% move. That's a big percentage move. But who is really going to get excited about a 0.18% return? It's still not a lot of competition for those of us who are seeking better returns. And the last line there, the 12-month CD, is basically the same thing. It went from 0.35 to 0.58. With interest rates rising, and you probably already know this, but it bears repeating, is that when interest rates rise, bond prices go down. They're inversely related. And I think the takeaway here, before we move into unemployment discussion, the key element here is that for a very long time, going back to the early 1980s and the early days of Ronald Reagan's presidency, we've been in a very long-term trend where interest rates have come down. They used to be in the high teens or low 20s in the early 1980s, and they steadily came down pretty much year after year, year after year, decade after decade, to the point where we almost got to 0% interest rates over the last couple of years. But the thing that we need to be watchful of is not only are interest rates rising, it's been a really, really long time since the markets and investors had to contend with an environment where the Federal Reserve was steadily and consistently raising interest rates. And I think that may take some people by surprise and perhaps could cause some trouble. Unemployment, I know we touched on it before, but this chart shows that the United States unemployment rate is down to 3.8%. This is the lowest outright level seen since the year 2000. That means you got to go back past President Obama's administration, past George W. Bush's administration, and pretty much get back to when President Bill Clinton was in office to get to an unemployment rate that we're experiencing today. There's some noteworthy things to know about this. As I mentioned earlier, this is very good unemployment record. I keep talking about historical perspectives, and I think this one is a notable one as well. In the recorded history of monthly unemployment figures, only 10% of all of the months ever counted have been better than where we are today. So since 1948, you calculate all of the months. 9 out of 10 times, the situation was worse than it is now. We're in the top 10% of how good it's ever going to be. And again, despite our political differences in this country, despite some really, really harsh, strong debates, I think this is a thing that should be celebrated by all of us. So that is, as I mentioned in the earlier slide, really terrific, not just for the job market, but it's driving economic activity and contributing to the U.S. economy, GDP growth, growing faster than we did for the first 8 years coming out of the financial crisis. So let's talk about potential trade wars a bit more. China is the world's second largest economy. In the first quarter of 2018, China's economy reportedly grew at 6.8% faster than it did the year before. Not sure if I said that right. In the first quarter, compared to the first quarter of 2018, compared to the first quarter of 2017, the Chinese economy grew 6.8%. Now, there is a war of words between the Chinese president as well as President Trump. I don't think that the tariff issue will amount to much. I would bet that in a year or two, we will hardly be able to remember how and why the tariffs were spooking the markets in the spring of 2018. I don't have a crystal ball. I already said that once before, but I am pretty confident that this will not amount to a trade war, although we may have a resetting of some parts of global trade. And that might be a very good thing. Could be a bad thing, too. We'll have to wait and see. It's certainly something that we are monitoring. Tax law changes. We're not reviewing them today, but for 2018, there were some major tax law changes. I said early on in this presentation, some things that were part of this tax legislation was U.S. corporate income tax rate went from essentially 34 or 35% to a flat 21%. U.S. Taxpayers are seeing lower tax rates at various income levels. On top of that, the brackets were expanded and the tax law was simplifying tax preparation, so there's less deductions and a more generous standard deduction. All in all, it's estimated that 8 to 9 out of every 10 Americans will experience a tax cut in 2018. I personally think that's a very good thing. I don't love everything about the tax law, but I think on balance, this tax relief at this point in history is going to help the U.S. economy surge ahead, and I like that a lot. One of our commitments to our clients is to try and learn how the new tax law could possibly react with investments. And I do believe that this tax law, driven by some of the major reforms, open up some really terrific opportunities for some advanced planning on the tax and investment side. For those of you who are listening and are clients of ours, this is going to come up in the second half of the year when we review your accounts. And this opportunity and some of this planning is not going to be right for everyone, but there's some really compelling planning opportunities that have arisen out of this tax law change. Remember, the key point is that as an investor, you should remain non-emotional and not make rash decisions based on any one isolated set of facts. As always, we are closely monitoring all our clients' personal portfolios and goals. I love the quote there from Dr. Daniel Kahneman. I read his book, Thinking Fast, Thinking Slow. Amazing book, by the way. The more emotional the event is, the less sensible people are. I think that quote is probably always wise advice to observe, but I think today's highly charged political and media environment only makes this quote that much more important to keep in mind, and we will keep it in mind. Hopefully you do as well. As we all know, uncertainty can either create problems or it can create opportunity. We talked about things to be cautious about. So what should we do as investors? We always advise using caution when making any investment moves, and we highly suggest that you discuss your personal situation with us before making any major decisions. Your focus should be on trying to meet your personal goals, and this is a really good time with the return of volatility to revisit your risk tolerance as well as your time horizons. As I have said on a couple of occasions already, many analysts are predicting, and we are predicting, that this volatility will continue for the rest of 2018, which means this is a wonderful time to take a deep breath. We're in a rapidly changing environment, and I just did, within the last couple of weeks, an episode of the Simply Financial podcast called State of Change, which touches on some of what we're talking about, although from a little bit of a different angle. But as an investor, you need to prepare so you can analyze any environment safely. We want you to be prepared. We want to be prepared on your behalf and not be scared. I mentioned reevaluating risk. We want to make sure that we're taking the right amount of risk with clients, and sometimes that does change over time, but as I alluded to a moment ago, this is a great time to revisit it, and some people have been kind of forced to confront the riskiness of what they want to do based on some of this crazy up and down seesaw action in the market. Your focus should be on meeting your personal objectives. That's what our focus is. That's what my focus is for my clients. And my opinion is that an index isn't a measure of your portfolio. It's what your portfolio is doing, not what the market is doing, that is of primary importance. And your portfolio doesn't always move in lockstep or in sync with any single market or index. That's by design. If you want to be diversified and you want to spread your risk out across a wide array of investment classes, risk categories, different objectives, then you're not going to move in lockstep with any particular market or index. And your portfolio is probably different than everyone else's and should be based on your own personal goals, your risk tolerance, and your time horizon. Let's reevaluate your investment goals and objectives. Make sure you're comfortable with your investment strategy. For our clients, when we meet and regularly review our plans with them, that's happening. If you're not a client of ours and you want to check out your investment strategy and get our opinion on it, we would love to do so. I'll talk about that at the conclusion or near the end of this webinar. Confirm your investment timelines, whether we're investing and allocating money for the short term or the longer term or someplace in between. Reevaluate your risk tolerance and rebalance your portfolios accordingly. Comprehensive financial health. We want you to have a good retirement plan that takes into account tax planning strategies and estate planning. We believe the best approach to financial planning is to be comprehensive. We also use the term holistic. So in addition to reviewing your investment planning, don't forget that reviewing your retirement, tax, and estate plan on a consistent basis is always wise. We try to see if there are any appropriate changes or opportunities that have arisen, like, for example, the tax law, to help you in your personal situation. We will help you stay apprised of any other changes that may come about that may directly affect you. How can we help? We're always here to help our clients. We're always here to help you. Your focus is to meet your personal objectives. Our focus is you. We know that advice is not one size fits all. Our goal, my goal as your financial advisor, or if I become your financial advisor, is to help you make the journey towards your goal easier. My goal, and you know, for many of you, I'm looking at the list of who's joining in. There's many names I recognize and lots that I don't. But our goal is to continually monitor your situation. And for clients, I think you would attest to this, is that our regular communication, our systematic approach to checking in with clients, reviewing portfolios, checking in and get updates on goals, objectives, changes in financial situations and outlook is a recipe for financial success, allows us to make better decisions, and to avoid mistakes because we're monitoring your situation. So what can you expect from us? Again, constant communication. We have a regular schedule of client meetings. We're constantly reviewing economic, tax, estate, and investment issues for our clients. As your advisors, we're going to maintain a non-emotional objective. We're going to avoid knee-jerk reactions. We're always going to assist you in making decisions that are in your best interest. The technical term for this, everyone, is fiduciary. We are fiduciaries, which is, again, the technical term for we do what's in your best interest and we will be here for you. What's available now? We have our latest newsletters and reports. We do a weekly podcast, Simply Financial. If you haven't checked it out already, please do check it out and subscribe. You could go to iTunes, Stitcher, other podcast platforms, or you could go to the Elliott Wealth website. It's www.elliottwealth.com. And I do a weekly radio show, The Buzz, which is a local show here in Hartford County, Connecticut. I've been doing, I did recently a guest television appearance. And for those of you who are not our clients, we offer a complimentary financial checkup where we can meet in person or do it using a webinar or some electronic format. We'd love the chance to talk to you. If you know of anybody that would like to sign up for our monthly mailing list, please let us know. We'd like to help others in this volatile year of 2018. In fact, I'd be honored if you could share some of the names of your friends that we could add to our mailing list so they could benefit from the information we provide. So I know I skipped over questions. I'll just handle a couple. And so the first one is from Karen, and she wanted me to talk a little bit more about the, how do I phrase this? So she's asking about how is the political circus, that's my term, not hers, how is the political circus affecting the market? And what I would say to that is not much. Most of the time, if you see what the mainstream media, the cable news networks are talking about on any given night, most of what they are talking about is not what is driving the markets or the economy. It's not what small business owners are thinking about. It's not what CEOs and their boards of directors are debating. I think there is a disconnect between largely what is in the political and media realm and what's actually happening in the economy and what's happening in the markets. So I think there is largely a disconnect there. So my opinion is most of what's happening that we see and are debating politically is not the same as what's happening in the economy and the market in most instances. So with that, thank you so very much for taking the time to join me today. I really, really appreciate it. As I said, please subscribe to the podcast. You could do so at the website or iTunes. It's compatible with Android. And if anything, if there's anything I can do for you, please do not hesitate to reach out. Call the office. You could email me. You could go to our website and you could contact us through the website. That's especially true for those of you who are not clients and we may not have spoken before. So with that, have a wonderful day and let us know if there's anything we can do to help you. Thank you.
The views expressed are not necessarily the opinion of Sage Point Financial Incorporated and should not be construed directly or indirectly as an offer to buy or sell any securities mentioned herein. Investing is subject to risks, including loss of principal invested. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. No strategy can assure a profit nor protect against loss. Please note that individual situations can vary. Therefore, the information should be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Please note, the information being provided is strictly as a courtesy. When you link to any of the websites provided here, you are leaving this website. We make no representation as to the completeness or accuracy of the information provided at these websites, nor is the company liable for any direct or indirect technical or system issues or any consequences arising out of your access to your use of third-party technologies, websites, information, and programs made available through this website. When you access one of these websites, you are leaving our website and assume total responsibility and risk for your use of the websites you are linking to. Securities and advisory services are offered through Sage Point Financial Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, insurance services offered through Elliott Wealth Management, LLC, not affiliated with Sage Point Financial. It was a new